Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Horde, and this is the Bengals Booth Podcast, the back in orange and black edition, as we discuss the anticipated returns of Vontaze Burfict and Joe Mixon and get you set for Sunday's game at Paul Brown Stadium between two first-place teams, the 3-1 Bengals in the AFC North and the 3-1 Miami Dolphins in the AFC East. Coming up, an in-depth conversation with my broadcast partner Dave Lapham. Among other things, we'll discuss the future of Tyler Eifert after his season-ending ankle injury. And I will ask Lap if he agrees with the following comparison. Tyler Boyd is the new TJ Hushmanzada, with an easier-to-spell last name. And in this week's Know the Foe segment on the upcoming opponent, we'll talk to a former Dolphins tight end that is now part of their radio broadcast team, Joe Rose. All of that is straight ahead, but first, here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, or Podbean. It's the greatest invention since the remote car key fob. Not only does it make locking and unlocking your car and opening the trunk a little easier, but it definitely comes in handy when you forgot where you parked and can hit the little beep beep until you figure it out. Vontaze Burfict's four-game suspension is over. He is currently on a one-week roster exemption and can be activated at any time this week. Since Tyler Eifert will be going on injured reserve, it seems like a logical roster move to put Burfict in Eifert's spot on the 46. The bigger question is, how much will he be able to play? In addition to missing four regular season games due to suspension, Burfict missed much of training camp and all of the preseason games with an ankle injury. Here are Carlos Dunlap and Dre Kirkpatrick on the return of Tez.
Right now, he's in some of the best shape that I've ever seen him in. He looks lean. And he looks ready to go. He looks excited. He's in good spirits. You know, of course, he's healthy. Those are all positives that you add to a veteran player who plays like Vontaze plays, and I think you're going to get some great plays out of him.
I definitely feel like that game we lost, we wouldn't have lost if we had him. You know, he just brings something different. You know, he's a veteran guy. He's a guy that's known out there on the field. And, you know, guys have to worry about him. And I definitely feel like, you know, with the instincts that he brings to the game, he's always one step ahead.
Burfict's return, even on a limited basis, should help a Bengals defense that is dead last in getting off the field on third down. Opponents are converting an absurd 57% of the time. That's about 6% worse than any other team in the NFL. Burfict isn't the only key player the Bengals expect to have back. Joe Mixon says he's ready to return to the sport he loves after missing two games due to minor knee surgery.
Gotta love football. I mean, what's the point of playing if you don't love it? That's just, you know, the passion that I always have for the game. And just try to bring whatever juice I can and energy to my teammates as much as possible. I mean, they all feed off of it, so it's all good energy, and, you know, we just try to do whatever we can.
While Mixon was back at practice on Wednesday, rookie center Billy Price remains in a walking boot due to his foot injury and told reporters that he will stay in that boot for two more weeks. That means he won't be back for the Pittsburgh game a week from Sunday. Now time to bring in my broadcast partner, Dave Lapham. Tyler Eifert's ankle injury was a sickening sight last week. After all of his injuries, does he eventually come back and play? And how much does his injury impact this year's team?
I do think he comes back and plays. I don't think it's as tough a rehab as his back. It all depends on the collateral damage, dislocated with fracture. But there's tendons, there's ligaments, all that soft tissue in there, cartilage. How much collateral damage was done, I think that'll impact how long his rehab takes him. But knowing Tyler Eifert and the dedication that he's had and knowing exactly what he's facing, I do think he comes back. And losing him, I think Bill Lazor was impactful when we met with him earlier this week in saying that every time he was on the field, they were going nickel. So they were saying basically, we'll take our chances you running against our smaller people than you throwing against our base defense. He's too tough for our linebackers to cover, the safeties to cover. We want cornerback types covering Tyler Eifert in the passing game.
Lap, after Eifert's injury, I turned to you during the commercial break and said, you played a brutal game for a living. How does it affect players when injuries like that happen?
As you could see, Dan, when everybody was concerned about him, for both teams. They're all going over and, you know, trying to see how he was handling it, because he was in a lot of pain, obviously. Marvin Lewis said when he went out on the field, he was in a lot of pain, and he was concerned about, you know, are they getting it back in place properly and all the things. And I can identify, I dislocated my foot from my ankle, and I had a spinal surgery, and they just took my foot off my leg literally and plucked it back into place and put a cast on. And I was watching, because you're like, man, that's my foot. I want to make sure they put it back right, you know. And the doc's like, you can get a headache, that's spinal with you sitting up. I don't care. I got to see what you're doing. So I can identify with his immediate concern. When you first looked at it, you go, oh, man, what did I do? What happened? I can remember exactly what he was feeling and all the emotions of it and everything. So, and the players were turning their backs, you know. I mean, they were taking a knee and thoughts and prayers and everything, but they couldn't look at it. And the toughest thing to do, I remember in the practice field, a guy get hurt, would just move the practice down and continue to work and then turn around, look back, and is he okay? I mean, it's just it's cold that way, you know. And this guy has that gruesome injury. They throw him on a cart him off, and 2 seconds later, you have to be in your huddle. You know, forget about that and refocus, and now I go out to play football. That's hard. And they immediately gave up a sack, blocked punt. Defense rose up and held it to a field goal. But they were, you know, the mindset after seeing that to thinking, now I have to go back and go kick that guy's tail right across me. That's a hard thing to transition to. It really is.
Let's turn the page. It's been an incredible two-week stretch for Tyler Boyd. 17 catches, 232 yards in the last 2 weeks, including two game-saving fourth-down catches last week in Atlanta. It made me think of a comparison. Tyler Boyd reminded me of T.J. Hushmanzada. What do you think?
Totally agree. Said the same thing to some of the media guys yesterday, Dan, in the media room. Chad Johnson, you know, big personality, big performer, big play guy. T.J. Hushmanzada, just the antithesis of. Very serious-minded, very attention-to-detail guy, great route runner. Wasn't a blazer in terms of speed, but he had exactly what Tyler Boyd has, functional football speed. Sometimes guys don't run great 40s, but you put their equipment on, they run the same time. Some guys run tremendous 40s, put their equipment on, 0.2 seconds slower. And Tyler Boyd, T.J. Hushmanzada, when they sink their hips and get in and out of a cut, they don't slow down. So Steve Largent was my greatest example, 4.7 40. No one could cover him because he was running a 4.7 40 when he cut for the out. And a 4.4 guy, when he tried to, you know, change direction, he had to choke it down to a 5.1 and then try to pick it back up again. So Largent's getting separation. Boyd's getting separation. It's functional football speed. It's being able to play at your highest speed the entire play, no matter what route you're running. That's how he gets his separation and makes plays. T.J. Hushmanzada, Tyler Boyd, I think very, very strong comparison because they both have great football IQ. They knew exactly what coverage is. When a quarterback reads the coverage, the quarterback, Carson Palmer with T.J., and now Andy Dalton with Tyler Boyd, they know without a doubt that receiver is reading it the same way he is. So they're saying, I know exactly where he's going to be, when he's going to be there, because he sees it pre-snap, he sees it post-snap. He is on the exact same page as me. Not just the same volume of the encyclopedia, the same page of the volume.
Through four games, the Bengals are averaging 31.5 points. They have scored 126 points through four games. It took them 8 games last year to get that many. They didn't hit 126 until early November. But I want to talk about the defense. The defense is allowing 28.2, ranked 23rd in the NFL. Only 3 teams have given up more yards. Nobody is having more trouble getting the opponent off the field on third down. The opposition converting 57% of the time. Why has the defense been so lousy in the first quarter of the season?
That's a great question. Real quick statement on the offense before we get to the defense. All the good offenses that I played on, we didn't run that many plays, but we ran them a million different ways. You know, you only have maybe 4 plays and 5 passes that you really, really like in terms of construction of the entire play. But we'd run them out of so many different personnel looks, so many different formations, so much different motion. And all you're trying to do is get the defensive player to be hesitant. Either, oh, I'm not quite sure, I'm a half a beat late, or blow it totally. with an assignment error because of the change of strength of formation, different personnel. A.J. Green's in the slot on both sides of the field, outside both sides of the field. Every single receiver is interchangeable. That puts a lot of pressure on a defense. And then you're probing, where's my best matchup? Because I can play him everywhere. Who's the guy? And the players have input. They come to the sideline and A.J. Green says, listen, coach, I can beat the pants off of 24 here. Whatever formation you have to put me in, match me up on 24, I got them. That feedback's unbelievable, you know, and so there's so much communication going on. When I saw Bill Lazor and the new offensive coaches installing stuff in the offseason, I just happened to be walking through the gym, and the coaches are lining up in different spots in the formation and then moving, and I'm like, holy mackerel, this is unbelievable. I mean, if it's going to be like this, these guys are going to have a blast. I mean, there's so many different ways they can get to the same play. That's what Lindy Infante did, you know, when we had great success. That's what Bruce Coslet and Sam Weich did. Bill Lazor is doing it, and these guys are playing great offensively. Now your defensive question, Dan. On the flip side of things, it's puzzling. It's puzzling because usually if you have good edge rushers and you have good cornerbacks, you're 75% there. They have people that can pressure the quarterback. And they have good cover guys, and they're not 75% there. It's puzzling to me. You know, they're having trouble stopping the run for whatever reason. And you know, I thought guys would play at a higher level than they have. In a lot of cases, almost across the board. I do think that Carlos Dunlap and Geno Atkins are earning their money. I think they're playing very well. I think the injury, Ryan Glasgow injury, it's not like losing Tyler Eifert offensively, but this kid was playing really good football. Really good. He got one of my only pluses on the defensive side of the football when I watched the Carolina game again. He made plays, and he was busting his butt. Billings is puzzling to me. He gets washed away laterally. He was making a lot of plays in the preseason when he was penetrating, but when he has to, like, take it on and then run sideways, he can't stop and redirect. He's getting washed. And I watched Tupou, you know, he gave Mac trouble. Mac's a good center. Tupou was overpowering him a little bit. I think you just have to say, okay, let's see, you know, maybe we need to increase his number of snaps. Let's see if he can continue to do it. I mean, you have to do something because right now, for whatever reason, it's not working. It starts with stopping the run on a more consistent basis, and the problem is, Dan, they've gotten into, like, you know, third and longs, and they can't get off the field. Third and 13, a tight end catches the football and splits two tacklers twice. Four guys, two guys leverage him, properly leverage him twice, and he splits him. Come on now. You can't be doing that kind of stuff. That's why you're dead last in the NFL on third down, allowing 57% conversion. And, Atlanta, 73%. I mean, that's incomprehensible against the personnel that this defense has. It's mind-boggling.
Vontaze Burfict is eligible to return from his four-game suspension this week. Do you think he plays? And how long will it take him to be the Vontaze we're accustomed to seeing?
I think he does play, Dan. I think he's going to come back in good shape because just like Tyler Eifert, a lot of his contract or a portion of his contract is incentivized by being on the 46-man roster. So if he comes back out of shape and they deactivate him, he doesn't get his money. He's already missed four checks with suspension. He doesn't want to miss any more. So I think he's coming back in good shape. Even though they have the exempt tag on him at this stage in the seat of the week, they'll take it off. They can wait until Monday. They ain't doing that. They're going to take it off toward the end of the week. And really, you know, with Tyler Eifert's injury, they don't have to make any moves. They just bring him up and put Tyler on injury reserve. So I think they're going to do it, and I think he's going to be in shape. Now the question is, against Miami, who really wants to run the ball, right up his alley. But if it was Atlanta that likes to spread it, you know, now is he – Not mentally, he's there with all of it mentally, but all that running and pass coverage, he'll be sucking Suez Canal water quickly, you know? I mean, it's like, how many snaps can you take? And it's going to be hot. It's going to be in the 80s on that turf. It's going to feel like 90 degrees. But remember when he came back against Pittsburgh, Ray Mauluga get hurt. Vontaze was only supposed to play a few snaps. Ray goes down to injury. The dude's in there forever. His tongue is dragging down to his toes, but he's in there forever. So he's one of those throwback football players that the biggest thing, Dan, you can be in good shape, but not football shape because the push, pull, tendons, ligaments, attachments, all that's that football soreness. It's like, oh, man. And then you have to get through that, and then you're ready to play. He fights through that like it's fun. It's a good soreness, you know? I'm a football player. Nothing bothers that dude. I mean, that his makeup is unbelievable for the game of football, and I think he's going to give him a boost. I think the home fans are going to go nuts when he's out there, and they're going to feed off that energy. He's going to feed off it, and then the rest of the team's going to feed off of Vontaze. It's going to be a trickle-down of energy. It's going to be, you know, just like the scientists, you know, coming up with the electrical circuit, man. There's no circuit breaker. It's going to go right through everything. So I think he will play. The question is, how many snaps can he play? And if it's up to him, he'll be waving guys off. Get off the field. I'm fine. They're going to have to almost battle him. They're going to have to take a rope and lasso him and pull him off the field.
You said during the pregame warm-ups last week that Joe Mixon could have played in that game against the Falcons. He certainly looked 100% when he sprinted down the sideline and tackled A.J. Green after his game-winning touchdown catch. Do you think a two-week break might actually be a good thing for an NFL running back?
I think that he sees things maybe as he's looking at tape. It gives you a different perspective when you're on the sideline seeing it, and then you look at the game tape, and it's like, you know, maybe I should run it like Gio ran it.
How about in terms of his freshness, though? I mean, he's got a spring to his step, it seems to me.
Yeah, I think it was early enough in the season where I don't think he felt like he was beaten up or pounded down, but I do think that he is going to – he does have a spring in his step. The thing about Joe Mixon, all the great physical attributes he has, I mean, he's a freakazoid. I mean, his teammates, A.J. Green, we had on radio Monday night, and he said Joe Mixon is Le'Veon Bell, you know, Gurley, you pick any of them. Joe Mixon has that kind of physical ability and then to make plays because of that. He is a once-in-a-generation type specimen at the running back position. But the thing I like most about Joe Mixon is his unbridled joy for the game. And he ran down there. That wasn't fabricated. That's Joe Mixon. He ran down there and jumped on A.J. Green, celebratory. When Tyler Eifert made his touchdown catch, first guy in the field, big jump, chest bump, Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon loves to play football. He loves to compete. He loves everything about the game. That's what makes good players great, average players good, because they have an unbridled joy for the game. And I've said to Joe, I said, Joe, never lose your passion for the game, because that's what's going to make you Joe Mixon. And it was on display. He is frothing at the mouth to play. The thing that he's going to have to fight is don't be overhyped. Don't try to make five cuts instead of just one good cut. You know, don't try to just show everything off in three plays. He's going to have to, you know, come back down to earth a little bit because he is going to be so sky high. The adrenaline that's going to be coursing through his body for the Miami game and then the Pittsburgh game, back-to-back home games, ridiculous. And it's the cycle of life in the NFL as such. You lose Tyler Eifert, huge. But you get Vontaze Burfict and Joe Mixon back. It all, you know, there's always that, how do you piece everything together? There's always issues. There's always trickle down to injuries and trickle up when guys come back. So this week it's trickling up and down. There's good and bad to what's happening with the roster this week.
The Dolphins come to town this week. Miami won its first three games before getting smoked at New England last week, 38-7. Despite allowing 38 points, Miami's defense is tied for sixth in the NFL in fewest points allowed, and the Dolphins are number one in interceptions.
Yeah, 9 interceptions, Dan, leads the league. They've only thrown 3, so the plus-6 ratio also leads the league. But on those 9 interceptions, the key number there is they've returned them for 165 yards, 18.3 per return. So they're not only intercepting the football, they're flipping field position and saying, don't worry, offense. You don't have to concern yourself with like 16 and a half first downs, you know, even after we get the football for you. So they've done a great job of putting their offense in prime positions. That's the biggest thing they've done, I think. I think they've got a tandem of pass rushers. Cameron Wake, even though he's 36 years old, is still getting it done. Robert Quinn, they picked up from the Rams. He's good on the other edge. And Matt Burke, former Bengals linebacker coach, second year as defensive coordinator, he's got autonomy. I mean, you know, basically Adam Gase says, I'm the play caller offensively. You got the defense. And Matt Burke is blossoming and maturing in that role.
The Dolphins are 3-1. Their quarterback, Ryan Tannehill, who missed last year with a torn ACL, has a passer rating over 106. They picked up 78-year-old running back Frank Gore in the offseason. He leads the team in rushing. What do the Dolphins do well on offense?
Big plays, Dan. That's their key. I mean, Gore is amazing. 35 years old, still the leading rusher on his football team. That's pretty remarkable. He's got a run of over 20 yards. Drake has a run of over 20 yards, and Tannehill, the quarterback, has one. I did Texas A&M games when Mike Sherman played him at wide receiver, and he was the number two wide receiver. It wasn't a gadget gimmick thing. He was the second leading receiver on the football team. Ran great routes, speed. This guy is a stud athlete, I'm telling you. And then you look at him throwing the football, very efficient, completing just under 70%, seventh in the league in completion percentage, sixth in yards per attempt, 8.37 because of those big plays. That's why his quarterback rating is so high. And then you look at Stills, the kid out of Oklahoma. I remember I had him in college, big play guy, 75-yard touchdown reception. He's got 12 catches, three of them are touchdowns, averaging 18.7 a catch. That's a big play offense. You have to be heads up. Keep everything in front of you.
Final thing. The opponent is Miami. I want to turn the clock back to August 3rd, 1974, your very first NFL preseason game against the two-time defending Super Bowl champion, Miami Dolphins.
I couldn't believe it. Whenever I hear players say, man, that was a surreal experience, I'm like, dude, I know exactly what you're talking about. Super Bowl was to me. To run out on the stadium, the offense was introduced just by flip of the coin or whatever, and I don't think I ever felt my feet hit the ground when I was running through the tunnel and through the crowd of people to go play that game. It was like, oh, my God. I felt like I could pick the stadium up by myself. But that first preseason game against the Miami Dolphins, I remember sitting in my dorm at our alma mater, Syracuse, Dan, saying, watching the Dolphins play and saying, oh, my gosh, this is a machine. Man, I'd love to play in the NFL against these guys. And fast forward, there it is, you know, that August day. And I'm looking at Manny Fernandez, Nick Bonacani. I'm like, what the hell am I doing out here, you know? I was just, like, worshiping these guys months ago. And it was amazing to play against that defensive football game team, that no-name defense, you know, that was so good, so well put together. Howard Schnellenberger, their defensive coordinator, was unbelievable. This guy was ahead of his time in terms of being a coordinator. But it was just an amazing experience to play against those guys. And then after the game, I had met Zonka up at Syracuse. He came back to campaign for Rocco Pirro, my line coach, who was running for political office of some sort. Mm-hmm. So I had met him and idolized the guy. So I went up to him after the game was over, and he's broken his nose like 18 times. It's plastered on the side of his face, you know. And I said, Zonk, man, I'm serious. I should have done this before, but can I get your autograph? He goes, what are you talking? Are you serious? I said, I'm serious, man. But, you know, no paper, no pen or anything. But literally, I was, like, so in awe after watching him play and be on the same field. I really wanted the guy's autograph. The other one was Joe Namath. He played against the Bengals. Kenny Riley picked him off three times. That was his last, you know, game in New York, and they traded him to L.A. But you could tell it was winding down. And even though he stunk that day, I'm like, that's – Joe Willie, man, that's number one. We're number one, you know, with the big prediction to beat the Colts. And seeing him and being on the same field as him, I was like, I got to pinch myself, man. I must be sleeping. No, I'm awake. Joe Namath. And I asked him for his autograph after the game, too. He just looked at me and laughed, you know.
You're 0 for 2?
I'm 0 for 2, yeah. I'm not batting a very good average. No Hall of Fame for me, man, 0 for 2.
Thanks, Lap. Now time for this week's Know the Foe segment. And to get the latest on the Dolphins, former Miami tight end Joe Rose, now part of the radio broadcast team, joined Lap and me on the Bengals game plan show on Wednesday night. Dolphins broadcaster and former tight end Joe Rose is our guest. Let's talk about the football team, Joe. 3-1. They opened the season with three straight wins before losing at New England last week. That obviously can happen to anybody. What's been the biggest bright spot in this 3-1 start?
Well, I got to tell you, the 3-0 has been great, but it's amazing when you lose to New England 38-7, what it does to your fan base after being in the same AFC East with the B&B show for the last 17 or 18 years. Right. I have to chuckle because I've seen it all, and so I guess just when everybody says, hey, they haven't looked very good the last couple of weeks, they go back home, and they sure got a way of getting real healthy when you play them up in Foxborough. But just to get back to the team a little bit, you know, the strength has been takeaways. They give up a lot of yards on defense. They have all season long, but their ability to keep people out of the end zone until last week when the third down defense just killed them. They had some stops. I believe they had three stops and got holding calls in the secondary three different times after you get stops and Brady throws, you know, makes bad throws and they get fresh downs and it kills you. So that was one of the themes, and you can't turn the ball over. But I would say overall, just being able to win tight ball games, a belief. Adam Gase has got a bunch of guys he likes. As you know, we got rid of some pretty big name guys, or we didn't sign or match contracts with other teams. But they played really well. They fight. Again, the first three games, it was really fun to watch against Titans, Jets, and Raiders, winning all those games. But last week was a little reality. So, fellas, I got to be honest with you. I think everybody is kind of curious to see what they're going to look like on the road, because you can make an argument talent-wise. Cincinnati has got just as much, if not more, overall talent than the New England Patriots, and you've got to win on the road, as you know, if you're going to make the playoffs.
No, no question about it, Joe. You mentioned players that, you know, decided to move on from Jarvis Landry, Ndamukong Suh, Pouncey.
That's right.
Jermon Bushrod. I mean, they're up and down, different areas of the football team, different position groups. That was quite remarkable, but he wanted to have his type of guy in there. 16-5 under Gase. In games determined by 8 points or less from 2016 to the present. What is it about him in the team that they have confidence they're going to win those tight ball games?
Well, it's funny because the personality of this team is if they can hang around, they feel like they can win.
Uh-huh.
We've had some uglies. We had two or three of these uglies last year on the road where we got blown out, Baltimore, Carolina, blown out by a pretty good amount, but they get in tight ball games. They get turnovers. They teams step up. They've been able, especially under Ryan Tannehill, come up with just enough to win some games and get some impressive wins. And that's what they pretty much did the first 3 weeks of this season, is take those tight ball games, get that last drive, 5-6 minute drive to kind of run the clock out, not allow their opponent to get the ball back. So there's a real belief, and I think it does go with Adam Gase and his personality, but he's real big on this team stuff. And you know, sometimes I hear him talk about team and team culture and we're playing as a group, and you're always going, well, that sounds great, but you got to have players too. As you know, you got to have players that can make plays and big plays and be big-time players, and they got a lot of that, especially in the first 3 weeks. They had different guys. They had a lot of big plays offensively. They've right. got a fast group. And so I'm really curious, again, the balloon, a lot of the air went out of the balloon last week after what happened with New England. So they're rebounding. They also, you probably read Jordan Phillips, who's been kind of a co-starter, but
yeah.
played a lot of defensive tackle. Has been up and down as a player, but at times can really dominate. Had some issues with some coaches, and they cut him. Mm-hmm. And, you know how that is, man. It's hard to have depth in this league. We're all thin somewhere. So, boy, that was a little punch in the gut yesterday when I saw they let one of their biggest and at times one of their most physical players go on all the things that must happen for the team to release them in the first quarter of the season.
Hmm. We're discussing the Dolphins with broadcaster Joe Rose. Let's talk about quarterback Ryan Tannehill. Miami was a playoff team 2 years ago when he was healthy, missed all of last year with a torn ACL, and now they're 3-1 with Ryan Tannehill back. Has the ACL injury hampered him at all athletically, or does he look like the old Ryan Tannehill?
No, he looks like the old Ryan Tannehill. He does wear a little brace, but he has looked real good. And you know what? When he gets outside the pocket, which they didn't do last week,
mm-hmm.
And he can run that read option a little bit, and he can get outside and throw and run a little bit, he's been really good. And you're just reminded of how athletic he can be. He's been smart about it, too. You know, it's one thing about running against the best tacklers in the world, because sooner or later they're going to get you if you try to run. But he's been real good about sliding and trying not to take too many big hits. But they got to protect him because you can't just run around back there. You got to throw from the pocket as well. So that too. I just tell you, they got just. I don't know if you guys had a chance to see it. They got chewed up pretty good last week, and I'm really curious to see as Adam Gase goes back and makes some adjustments on his offense, what it looks like.
Darren Rizzi. Now, the Bengals, in my opinion, have the best special teams coach in football. Darren Simmons is outstanding. He does a tremendous job with Bengals special teams on a week-to-week basis. He's been here the entire time. Marvin Lewis has been here. This is his 16th year, and he is phenomenal. But Darren Rizzi, your special teams coach, has been there since 2011, and he's relatively unknown. I mean, you know, I'm like, if somebody said to me, Darren Rizzi, name the what he coaches and the team he coaches with, I would have struggled, but since 2011, you witnessed a block party every weekend, it seemed like. 20 block kicks, second only to the Oakland Raiders with 22 10-block punts, most in the league, 102-yard kickoff return touchdown, you know, that you got on the board. Now you get nicked up by the Patriots for a return touchdown. But, man, Grant is a water bug out there. What is it about Coach Rizzi, and he must have the players really responded to him?
You know, I would just say this, as you know, we've had a lot of different coaches through the years, and one thing's been consistent. They keep him. He's had offers from other teams every time there's a coaching change, and all they do, he's assistant head coach, which should really tell you what they think when Adam Gase comes in and says, hey, man, I not only don't want to lose you, I want you to be assistant head coach. I want you really involved in this thing. And you got my back. And he wasn't an Adam Gase guy, right? I mean, you know how coaches are. They want their own guys that they knew from when they first started and all that stuff. And that security blanket of no matter where you are, you know those guys are your guys. And he has been so good, not just blocking kicks, but all the returns and what he's been able to do. I just think the fact that, he's one of the best coaches on this staff. And by the way, did you ever think we'd be talking about having 24, 25 coaches on every staff compared to the old days?
I know.
I mean, you get on that team plane now and you go, holy smokes, I forgot about how many coaches and assistant coaches and for every position. You know, it's like every two players you have one coach now. But, he's a special guy, and he's a fireball, but he's a really smart return guy, sets things up. You know, when you have success, guys start to really buy into what you're doing.
Yep.
So he's been really special guy.
You're right. I mean, back in the day, every single position coach took care of a special team. You know, the tight end coach would have the punt team. The running back coach would have the punt return team. They didn't
have
a special teams coach. Every coach had one area of special teams. It was crazy. Final question. We appreciate you carving all this time for us, Joe. Two guys that are Methuselah. One offensively, Frank Gore, 35 years old, going to be wearing a yellow jacket, a gold jacket. I mean, this guy, fourth in the NFL in rushing. Nobody really talks about Frank Gore being in the fourth in the NFL in rushing yards. And Cameron Wake, 36 years old, still a lot of juice on the edge. What is it with these two guys? What do they drink down there in Miami?
I will tell you one thing those two have is, as you mentioned, one's 35, one's 36, is I've talked to Cam Wake about this because I like a lot of people. I like a cold beer and on the weekends. I like to have a few on the road. Cam Wake puts no alcohol or nothing bad in his system. Sometimes even as healthy as these guys eat now in their own kitchens in the NFL that they have and the food they serve to these guys, which got real healthy, he's got somebody who cooks his food at home. He is 100% healthy, nothing bad in his system. And I think guys are looking at him going, wow, that's pretty impressive. And Frank Gore loves working out in the off season. He's just a year-round football guy. It's been impressive. You know, he played at the end of the game when that thing was over.
Right.
And carried the ball, ends up making a catch, breaks a tackle for a touchdown. And and he was playing like he was back in high school when he was the best running back and one of the best running backs in high school I've ever seen in South Florida. Just amazing. And I just looked at my partners doing a game. I said, that's why he didn't care. He didn't go, hey, we're down four or five touchdowns. Don't put me in, man. And that's the way he plays. He plays that way. He made it clear to Adam Gase, I'm coming down, but I'm not just coming down to so all the young guys can see how I work and I prepare and that I'm a junkie over here and I love to work out and everything. I want to play. And so he got mad during the preseason. They say, hey, we really don't want to play. And he's like, no, man, I need to get some carries. So the stories have been real legendary about both these guys. And into their mid-30s, you know, when most guys are done, unless you're a quarterback, they're still rolling along at a pretty high pace.
Love guys that have an unbridled joy for the game. Play for the love of the game. Love yeah. guys like that, you know?
They got it. No question about it. Those yep. two love it. And guys that didn't make it the first time around the NFL, like Cam Wake, had to go to Canadian Football League, yep. had five teams, put up big numbers in 2 years, comes back over, five teams are interested, Dolphins get him. You know, you're still going, well, he's a Canadian Football League player. I wonder how good he's going to be. But you know what? He wasn't a first-round pick. He got knocked down by the NFL once, came back a couple years later, and, boy, you could tell he's still hungry and plays at a high level. It's a pretty special story.
Our thanks to Joe Rose, and that's going to do it for this episode of the podcast. If you haven't done so already, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or Podbean. And if you have a minute, please give it a rating or leave a comment. Your feedback is appreciated, and 5-star ratings help more Bengals fans find this podcast. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.